The title is Perfect Simplicity Is. Perfect Love Simply Is. This is a very difficult subject for us to approach just mentally. The problem is we're approaching it mentally. So, how can a perfect creator create an imperfect part or parts? If everything is God, the Creator, and God is everything, what's our beef? Everything being perfect in the illusion of duality, the problem. It is beyond thought, beyond words, but not beyond experience. If you've had a moment when you were asking for something and you needed something and you wanted to, let's say, make a report on something for school or anything, and you didn't have the information at hand that you wanted. You couldn't find it, and you couldn't find it, and you couldn't find it. And I've given this example before, that you can walk into the dentist's office and be waiting for your turn to get drilled and pick up a magazine that's months out of date, flip open the pages, and there's an article with the exact information. Now, for one split second, you absolutely know that you didn't do it, that some other energy field was at work, because it was like weeks after you wanted the information, and then it's there. Those moments when you hold a newborn baby and you don't know why, but you absolutely love it. There's just this experience, and you could put 1,000 words to it. But what it is it's beyond just reason. It's experience that makes you feel that love. So some part of us is able to go beyond our mental conditioning, our linguistic patterning, our belief systems, and be surprised by how something works out perfectly when we were thinking it was going to go to hell in a handbasket. So this strange over-experience comes when the ego is at rest, when it's not pumping up a bunch of data, it's not full of adrenaline. There's something that relaxes the nervous system, and another layer frequency of information is available. Our problem is we're always with adrenaline. We're always with tension, chemistry in the body, because it's fight and flight, self-protection, that sort of thing. And until we let go of that tension, we can't reach that frequency that everything is perfect. If we are tense, how is everything perfect? Why are you tense? You have fear that it's not going to be something else, or it's not going to be this way, or it's not going to be that way. It's a fear. It's a tension. And that's why all of the tools of the path are about relaxation, joy, centering, letting go, sauntering, hurry and worry, kill the man. Girls survive it, guys don't, man. So, in a nutshell, the path of the masters is about neutralizing the body energy, getting it to neutralize. And you won't think that creation has a neutral, perfect capacity if you're using the conditioning of your societies, how you've grown up. You're needy, wanty. You're always needing and wanting to figure something out. You know, why is it this way? Why is it that way? Why is whining? Don't you say, why? Children, why? You want to smack them sometimes. Why? It's always why. And it's whining because they can't know. And while they're busily adding vocabulary and experiences to their life, they're also getting hypnotized not to trust quiet, not to trust relaxation, because hurry up, get ready, you know. Get to school, get to da-da-da, do your job, get your reports in, da-la-la, get to the work. You know, it's always hurry and worry. Why would hurry and worry be such a big deal? Because it is what the pretender to the throne of the spirit uses to keep you from relaxing and receiving the frequencies, subtle frequencies of spirit and love and perfect, to accept what looks imperfect as perfect. Can you do that? No. You don't like the kicker of the dog. But if the kicker of the dog and the dog are both God, what's the problem? Your perception. Is there even a kicker, and is there even a dog? Or are they just dreams? And what if they're both dreams? What if it's a dream? What if everything you see is part of a dream, but you haven't wakened up yet? This dream, you're still dreaming. But you can go to another layer of dream, and you can actually go to different layers of dream by different chemistry in your body. If you fear something, your ability to see straight and hear straight is impaired. So you're in another frequency of experience. And when you get out of the fear mode down to the ego mode, only the ego mode, you're in another layer of illusion. And if you keep neutralizing, sooner than later, you begin to develop the archetype structure of potential for receptivity. You have the archetype present where you are in the possibility of your neural capacities, your biological capacities to transmute into receptivity frequencies towards the spirit. That's what the whole practice of the path is about. That's what the whole science is about. It's science. So we have to come to the realization that we're locked in the prison of certain frequencies by using them over and over and over and over and over again, and not interrupting the sequence over and over and over and over and over again. Getting quiet, getting centered, getting joyful. And you have to use different tools as you are doing different things. In other words, if you're doing the dishes, you're not meditating. You're not just sitting and being still. Your body is in action. And you really have to pay attention that you're not cutting yourself with a knife or you're not dropping a dish. You're paying attention there, but it doesn't mean you have to be tense about it. But if you think you might drop a knife, you're going to get tense. Or if you think you're going to be doing, you're instantaneously squirting adrenaline and getting more tense. Now, who's invested in your tension? What is invested in your tension? The great pretender to the throne of the spirit, the ego. Now, why are you given an ego? Well, when you see God kicking me in the shins and say, why did you do that to me? You know, how come I got through? You know, why did I have to get through all that? No. And then you say, oops, everything is perfect. He created a perfect creation, and I'm part of that perfect. It's perfect that I'm imperfect. It's perfect that I don't believe in perfect until I can believe in perfect. If I want to believe that a perfect creator created a perfect creation, what do I have to do? I have to give up me. I have to give up the ego me. Everything I've learned, everything I acquire, all that BS about being productive and being this and being that. I'm only left with a handful of things I need to be. Joyful. Loving. Open-hearted. Open-minded. Relaxed, and then still, and then when I can be really still, like for meditation, not just more quiet, not more settled, less adrenalized, then when I'm really still and I can center at the third eye and for the hearing, then that's when most of the transmutation can take place at the center of the cells to reach their archetype potential to permanently lower your threshold of tension. Now, I've often used the example of tests they were running on people. They had people from New York, they had people from small communities, and they had people from out on farms. And what they did is they took, over a period of 2 weeks, they took a timeline monitoring of the baseline tension of each individual, each person. And then what they did is they subjected all of the groups to banging, clanging, garbage can, car doors slamming, you know, sirens blowing, blah, blah, blah. And then they measured the level of adrenaline each person went to and how long it took them to return to their baseline that they had measured before. Country folk took about 2 weeks to return to baseline. Small town people, a month or so. They could never return to baseline measurements on New Yorkers. It was cumulative. Now, I understand that because when I moved to New York and lived there for 6 years, 7 years, whatever, and then I moved to California, I went through periods of literal unsnapping of tension in my body. It just like, whew. And I could feel when it let go. And I went down to a lower baseline. And a few months later, I went to a lower baseline. And then I went to another baseline. It was cumulative in my body. And you don't know how much tension you carry in your body because it's indigenous to your self-identity. You don't think of it as a chemical mirage that you're living. You're living a chemical mirage. So how do you wake up from that? That is the whole structure of the path and the science of the path of the masters, why they call it the divine science of the soul. It's because if you can't interrupt tension with relaxed smiling, plain and simple, why it's important to smile often is because it not only stimulates the chemistry for the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the relaxing one, but it also activates the vagus nerve, which is a controller. And you have to exercise those frequencies for them to want to voluntarily come as opposed for you to cognitively introduce them. You have to cognitively introduce over and over and over again relaxation. When you're in the middle of a job or you're in the middle of doing something and you realize your shoulders are up around your ears, or you're worried about something, you can't, you know, figure something out, and you need to get something done, You got to get home, fix dinner for the kids, whatever. You are chronically finding a repertoire of things to think about. The ego is thinking a repertoire of things to be tense about. Needs, wants, timelines, etc. It's like they've got a gun to your head. If you don't get home to get the fever down, and if you don't get to work on time, and whatever, you're a mess. because your level of adrenaline and other tension chemicals in the body have to be downtrained and outtrained cognitively. You have to strategize how to do it, when to do it, repeating it. The problem is that the fight and flight instinct from the sympathetic nervous system is automatic. And it's faster than the parasympathetic nervous system. But that's why there's triggers that are the relaxing your shoulders, watching yourself relax, making yourself relax cognitively, making yourself smile cognitively, being open-hearted cognitively, and being open-minded cognitively. But are you asking to see God in the murderer? That's a problem. Are you asking to see God in the kicker of the dog? Are you asking to see God in the dog kicked? What about all these people in war zones where there is nothing but crescendos of energy, of bombings and meanness and violence and that sort of thing? What do you think the threshold of their tension is? They were doing an anniversary ditty on the TV about Auschwitz being finally closed, and the handful of survivors that are still around. When I was flying to Switzerland, when I was flying internationally, I was sitting in the waiting room because our flight was delayed, and so I was sitting with the passengers in the waiting room. And there was a woman there that was just, you might say she was dripping in diamonds and pearls and fur. And she was having this very animated conversation with the man next to her. And she was telling him all about having survived Auschwitz. She was living Auschwitz pain and suffering through all of her diamonds, through her fur, that she was there, safe and sound and rich. But she wasn't safe and sound and rich. She was suffering. She was still on the frequency of Auschwitz. And that's how deeply scarred people can be. And whatever people go through where they get, you know, tremendous shocks or they have tremendous needs and wants that aren't seeming to be met or they can't meet, they're just locked into frequencies of tension that aren't unwinding unless they deliberately go through a process of learning how to do that. That's why Ho'oponopono and why tapping are so useful. And they've been, luckily, they've been beginning to use those techniques with veterans who have been suffering from what we call shell shock, right? And for the trauma of going through war. And didn't matter how many medicines they got, it didn't matter how much, you know, verbal therapy they got, they were still caught in it. Post-traumatic stress. But when they started using tapping, it went away. Now, isn't that interesting? So, what was tapping doing? It was releasing along the meridians of acupuncture the stored tension triggers. But if they weren't released, So, deliberate cognitive intention to release tension in your body is essential. It's not optional because your body is storing certain frequencies of tension that is supported by chemistry. And if you don't break the tension and change the chemistry over and over and over and over again, you don't overcome the habit of going back to that tension level. So enlightenment is letting go of you. Letting go of the old you. Letting go of the doer. Now, if you have to do things, you have energy. Have to do. Need to do. Needy, wanty, have to. So if you're cognitively relaxing over and over and over again, you slowly, slowly, slowly break down the level, the base level, like the New Yorkers could never reach base again. But the guys who weren't subjected to that kind of onslaught of noise from car doors slamming and sirens in the road day and night and, you know, crowds of people and that sort of thing, they could return to a lower frequency of tension. They could relax faster. They could get lower in their tension level. So it's a science. Enlightenment is a science of getting rid of the ego design plan of keeping you from relaxing enough to be with the Spirit, to be available, to be guided by the Spirit. And that doesn't mean choirs of angels and all that sort of thing. That means that you'll just stand up and go do something and you'll find out it was the perfect thing at the perfect time. Now that doesn't mean that you won't have contact with master power and God power. It means that you have to open the door slowly to get there. And you might have experiences, but you know, as Master Kripal used to say, one experience can last a very long time. Because it will be astonishing. It can be astonishing. And that shows you that it's available, you just aren't visiting it regularly. But that doesn't mean you're not making progress. If you are making progress, if you use that as a boost to learn to relax. One of the things that athletes have finally gotten onto over the years is using visualization to practice runs, like their slalom going down. If you watch the skiers in the Olympics at the gates, they're closing their eyes and you can see that they're like, and they're tracking the slalom course down the mountain. And they're visualizing it. And that visualization is actually training their nerves to train their muscles of how and where and what kind of speed and what kind of, you know, positioning to put the body in to make the turns and to make through the gates and that sort of thing. Can you imagine someone trying to go off a ski jump in the Olympics? And I don't know how many feet in the air, or do you know?
It depends on the jump, if they go high.
How well?
I say it depends on what kind of jumping they're doing, but you know, it's high, 40, 50 feet.
But it's a lot. And if their tips drop on their skis, slam, bam, thank you, ma'am, it won't be a walk-away event. So, of course you see them up there visualizing, because they're priming their nervous system to cope with the speed and to visualize what position their skis need to be in when they're sailing out from the tip of the jump over the degree of slope. And if they weren't visualizing, they're going to have a problem. If you watch people who do sharpshooting during the Olympics, they're hitting a quarter size hole on a target that's like 50 yards away. And they are pumping skiing, then they have to plop down and get absolutely still within a few seconds so that they can steady their gun and aim correctly their rifle to shoot through that hole. If you don't visualize, you don't do it. Now, if you wake up in the morning and you can't visualize getting hold, getting a grip before you start getting going on what your day is going to look like and what you need to do during the day to recondition your level of tension during the day and where you would be more tense, you know, it would be something you would normally be more tense doing, and you don't visualize doing it with less tension. You're just walking back into the trap. 2 inches forward, 4 inches back, 2 inches, you know. You have to realize that's why enlightenment is so difficult. You're born to be tense. Fight and flight, period. Sympathetic nervous system rules. You come into life screaming. The traveling down from the womb through the birth canal is not yummy, yummy, and relaxing. It's a stress event. So it triggers the stress mechanisms. It's a setup. You're in a setup. And from that minute on, you're working to get what you need. My bottle, my diaper changed, screaming. Learning to crawl, learning to get the toy, the anxiety of being able to do things. And of course, adults are grooming it. You know, they move the toy further away. They put something a little higher. They do things, and then they go, good work, good work, good boy, good work, you know. In my day and age, I don't think we use that term. I don't think anybody was saying good work to you, but now it's like a universe to, you know, good job. But you see, that's grooming tension. It's just grooming tension, it's hypnosis. And waking up from hypnosis is very, very challenging. So that's why enlightenment is so difficult. You have to remake the cellular structure of your body, your chemical habits and addictions of tension in the body, overcome the sympathetic nervous system, and be able to sit and relax, saunter rather than run or hurry and worry. I mean, you know, when I was flying and you're in a big jumbo jet, you have 450 people to sit down dinner and drinks three times before you arrive in London from Los Angeles. You're on a pair of roller skates, up and down the aisles. So the idea that you're always looking to see what somebody may need and remembering where they're seated and bringing it to them and trying to stave off the hungry as you're walking the wrong direction with all the meals. It's like you're looking at tense people. And you're the target. You know? So it's a setup. Being in the body, doing human things, is a setup. Okay, have a good cry and then forget it. You know? Scream and yell and kick the shins of God when you see him. But it's, if you don't take it as a science of overcoming and killing you, you have to kill you. You have to kill the basic personality traits of thinking you have to be one way or another to get an income or raise the kids or, you know, do whatever. You have problems. Every single human being has got problems. Some are much more, let's say, challenging than others. But by the time you're on the path, the masters think you must be ready to meet the challenge. So, okay, let's fit a visit a few of our friends that have met the challenge. Our friend Rumi does God keep from fainting? The wonder of water moving over the rock in the stream justifies existence. The swish of a horse's tail. Again, I am stunned by the grandeur of the unseen one that governs all movement. I resist looking at the palms of my hands sometimes. Have you ever gotten breathless before a beautiful face? For I see you there, my dear. There is a wonderful problem waiting for you that God and I share. How to keep from fainting when we see each other. In truth, how does God keep from fainting looking at himself all day? Light is moving like a stream. The myriad celestial beings applaud. Okay, come on. Okay, I'll do it. Sing longer songs tonight because sometimes you're just so damn hard to please, and I guess I am still courting you, trying to get into your soul's knickers. What makes you like that, grouchy around the edges? What classrooms have you been lounging in? What nonsense have you traded for your gold? How can you look so needy? God is growing in fields you own. He hangs from trees you pass every day. He is disguised as that peach and pine cone. Every sound I hear, he made it. I have been walking with two canes these days. Guess why? It's because of his beauty and the blonde peach fuzz floating everywhere like dust. It has made me so drunk. Spiritual health. A good gauge of spiritual health is to write down three things you most want. If they in any way differ, you're in trouble. You know what the one thing is that the three things are? Oneness with God. Well, it is not an easy task to kill the ego. And that's what ends up being. The idea that you can just go merrily back and forth and back and forth and back and not slowly be gaining ground where you spend more time relaxed than returning to tension. Because every return to tension is an undoing of the cellular structure that comes with relaxation. The archetype that we need to manifest is the one that can stay through all kinds of energy changes and stay remaining centered and calm, joyful, open-hearted, open-minded. So, as the one doer, there's only one doer, but can we begin to really believe it? In the beginning, it's a fairy tale we tell ourselves. The master said, you know, excuse me, there's only one doer. If you're in God and God's in you, who's the doer? Even your uptightness is God's doing. Go kick him in the shins. It's a setup of an experience. You are in an experience of being bereft of contact with your soul. It's not that your soul isn't there. And like I say, everybody will say, well, you know, they're, when they die, they've gone to a better place. And my question is, where were they when they weren't going to a better place? Where was their soul when it wasn't going to a better place, for God's sake? I mean, they don't even think of what they're saying. Suddenly there's a soul that's going to leave. Oh, yay. What was the soul doing all this time? Wandering around or, you know, having coffee with a neighbor or what? So if the soul was in us all along, man, know thyself as soul. If it's always there, and we have to wait until someone dies to know it, or address it, or think of it as existent, there's something phony baloney going on. And we haven't copped to it. The soul is in us always. We're off frequency with listening to it, because we're on frequency with adrenaline, which is run by ego, which is generated by fight and flight, which is generated by the biological body that is going to die, and it doesn't want to. If there were Siamese twins, and the doctor said, you know, this isn't working. Which one of you want to die so the other one can live? That would seem, woo, you see. And let's say you were the Siamese twins, one of them. Are you volunteering? Are you volunteering to let go? And that's how tenacious your ego is. It's a life force that wants to go on living. It wants to prevail. And it doesn't want you to downtrain and outtrain its source of power, i.e., all the chemistry of tension, and all the thoughts of tension, and all the doership of tension. It doesn't want you to know there's only one doer, and it isn't it. The puppet maker pulls the strings, and the puppet maker is the soul. And the puppet's just making up stories why it's lifting its hand when the string is pulled. Oh, I'm scratching my nose because, you know. We make up stories of why we're doing stuff. The soul is making us do it. There's only one doer. But we're making up stories, and so we live in this fantasy world of ego. And that's hard to swallow. And the ego is fighting tooth and nail. It doesn't like hearing what I'm saying, you know. It's, we're over the edge here, girlie. It doesn't want you to digest that your ego is your enemy. And that you got to step on its throat. Kindly, gently. Smiling, relaxing. Oh, wouldn't you like to go under the carpet there? You see, we don't get, we're at war. We're at war with the ego. Well, the ego is at war with our soul. It doesn't want to shut up and be guided to the point that it doesn't have, it doesn't anymore have the rights to, let's say, ignore the directives of the soul. Or to witness that it never had control. That the puppeteer is always pulling the strings. The soul, if the soul is in our body, and it's going to go to a better place, how does the soul manage your body? Because when it leaves, you're dead. Think about that. Soulless and no body. You see, we never think that it's the soul alive in us that's keeping us alive. It runs every molecule, every atom, everything in the body. And we're going, well, maybe I'll sit and meditate. Well, maybe I'll smile once in a while. Well, maybe. And it's going, oh, honey. Let me tell you how wrong you are. I hold all the strings. And if you don't want to have some real misery opportunities, oh, you've already passed those many lifetimes of extreme misery, and now you're kind of in a better place. Okay. What are you doing with your better place? You see, it's really that blatant. It's that blatant. But nobody tells you that when you're growing up. Nobody tells you that you have to kill your ego's pattern. Period. And that's why so few people enlighten. It is difficult. And it doesn't happen by wishful thinking. It happens by strategy and plan and effort. And the good news is every one of the tools is self-rewarding. Joy is self-rewarding. Instantly you're joyful. What happened? You got better circulation, better breathing. You feel more relaxed, you feel more full of faith, you feel more, you know, in tune, alert, feeling good, huh? Open-heartedness. Oh, that's kind of nice, you know. But let's not do that very often. Yeah. We might get used to it. And it's hard when there are so many mean people in the world. I know. And open-minded, oh my God, don't watch the news. Open-minded to what and who and where? God, you come in very strange clothes. You see, if you could witness that God is a comb over that, you know, if you could see that, if you ask to see it, do you ask to see God where you don't want to see it? Do you ask to see God in, you know, difficult situation, difficult people? No. You just kind of tense up and say, what can I do to get through this? Instead of, oh God, show me the God here. Show me your God self in the peach tree and in the acorns and in the pine cones and in the water. I mean, water crystals are spectacular. When the water is clean, when it's not being mishandled and misused, when it gets frozen and photographed when it's being used as a dump, it's a little not crystally. It's kind of murky. So the job is to quit being who you are and be another relaxed, joyful, open-hearted, open-minded, sauntering, relaxed. Remember when we had Camp Relax and everybody was trying to learn to saunter and all they did was squat walk? You know? You know, they were like sneaking. They thought sauntering was sneaking. That's how often they sauntered in their life. They were sneaky. It made them tense to saunter. I remember in Washington, D.C., there was a group of Buddhist monks that were kind of novice monks with some senior monks, and they, in order to train the Zen monks to walk, saunter, they have these little round drums on a stick, skin on the thing, and then they do a cadence walk. And they're walking along in front of the White House, beating their little drum and sauntering. And if it takes that, it takes that. And it takes that, according to some of the Zen teachers, to learn to walk in a cadence of relaxed behavior, you know. I don't know how many months they keep them on that drum, but I think it's a pretty good idea. I should issue those. Okay. Dalai would fail every time. Okay. So, what's it going to be? Playtime or serious business time? Because let's say the sand is running through the hourglass, to put it politely. And how many possibilities of life extensions you may need to finally get to where you can literally, intentionally, cognitively do the things that break the patterns and establish new ones. So, and it doesn't come overnight. It doesn't come overnight. So, you know, it's however long it takes, and every person is a different, you know, level of performance and dedication and awareness. But, you know, you can keep going backward or you can decide to keep moving forward instead of, you know, back some, forward some. You know. Your drum broke. Okay, so now you're rushing. Well, I just can't find my little palette. Oh, okay. Smiling? What are you talking about, smiling? You know, it's interesting that the Zens, Buddhas, don't smile a whole lot. You know, they look pretty serious about what they're doing. Getting the walk right, but not getting the relaxation and joy right. I think we have to have a good combo. Camp combo. Saunter and smile at the same time. All right. I don't know how many times you have to hear it, but we'll give it the old royal one too, right?